Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you from Metron at or in historic Midtown Atlanta. Metron people, give the podcast people a hand. And every 2 or 3 days, I get another great message from somebody in some other part of the world that says they just love the podcast. Podcast is a totally different thing from the YouTube videos, because podcasts, you know, they're on your phone. You don't even have to do anything. It's like if you just get the app, it will tell you when one is ready for you to listen to. And they're very powerful. So I appreciate the team that helps do that, especially Charles. Listen, before I get into my teaching today, I want to address something. Last Sunday, Fred stood up and said something that I both texted him and wrote on his Facebook page. I said, "You spoke prophetically today." And the thing about a prophetic word is a real prophetic word will shake you up. I mean, it will, not in a negative way, but it will, like, sometimes when a prophetic word is spoken, you feel something shift in your foundation. And I'm not qualifying what he said. Fred's been an ordained minister. He's a grown man. I don't have to speak for him. I want to add to what he said. I applaud him for his bravery in what he said, and I also applaud you for your maturity in receiving it. Because he made the statement, "We don't need Jesus anymore." Well, you say that to some in some places, there's some Christians' heads going to explode. And, of course, he was saying it within the context when he and Roz were in Cherokee. They had talked to some Native American people. And the Cherokees there were telling them what their sort of credo was about feeding the hungry. And I mean, it basically was Matthew 5, what they said to him. And Roz had even posted something about, you know, this is just... That's not exclusive to the Bible. People talk about this Judeo-Christian ethic. That ethic's, it's in the world. The Jews and the Christians weren't the only ones that tapped into that. And it's really smug and arrogant of Christians to think that they're the only ones that have the inside track on stuff like that. I mean, it's basically the Ten Commandments is just every culture in the world embraces. That's just, you know, a given. What he was saying, and I wouldn't change a word of what he said, because it needed to be, it was prophetic. He was just bold. He said it. He didn't apologize for it. He didn't qualify for it. That's the way a prophet speaks. But I want to say some things about it, because on the way out, Doc Sheila was talking to me. She said, "Did you actually hear what Freddie just said?" I said, "Yeah, it's a trip, isn't it?" And she said, "It's just amazing that everybody received it." I said, "Well, I see that as a very good sign." And then later she texted me. We were talking a little bit more about it, and she was talking about Acts 15 when the apostles decided that people coming into Christianity didn't have to go through Judaism first. You remember there's a big issue about whether the men had to be circumcised or whatever, and it was a completely different concept. What he was saying, and again, I'm not qualifying it, but the pastor in me wants to expound on it, is basically what I have said for the last year or so, is that I'm not trivializing the blood sacrifice of Jesus. I'm saying that if you didn't think you were fallen, it wouldn't be necessary for you. And really is what, in Genesis, what God is implying when he says, "Who told you you were naked?" He could just as easily have said, "Who told you you needed a Savior?" But if Adam thought he was fallen, then he was fallen. You are what you think. I mean, you just are. I mean, even when Jesus came along and he said, "You've heard it said, don't put away your wife except for adultery. I say if you've even fantasized about adultery, you're an adulterer." What he was saying is that the internal world is what's real. And what I see on the upside is if I think of myself as a millionaire, I am a millionaire. If I think of myself as successful, I am successful. I mean, that's just basically, that's just all in the scriptures. I do want to say, however, in, for lack of a better term, defense of Jesus. Jesus' coming was not just about going to the cross. I mean, to me, the most important part for me, the Jesus that I love, because I don't feel fallen. I don't feel, you know, redemption to me is a state of mind that I bought into at one time, but that's not necessary for me now. Robert, you know, I only look at every third or fourth of Robert's posts because he is prodigious in his posting. But he did post something, I guess this morning, where he showed a picture of the baby that they adopted, Adam, he showed him next to his hand, and he was smaller than his hand. They don't know who the daddy was, and the mother was a meth addict who gave the baby. The hospital called him and Robbie Joe and said, this baby's going to die, and it's just sad to see a baby die himself. Would you just come be here for the death? And Robert technically raised him from the dead, and he's a beautiful baby now. I mean, like, it's amazing. But what he said was, there was a time this baby needed an incubator and certain drugs or whatever. He said that might not have been what I would have chosen for him, but that's what got him to this point that he doesn't need now. And he said, that's the way I feel about religion. Like, I needed it at one point, and I thought, man, now you've posted some stuff that I'm like, Robert, whatever. But on that one, okay, thank you. That you nailed it. And that baby, to me, seems very, I'm overusing the word prophetic, but prophetic in that we all kind of were there. You know, when you keep hearing people say, you're not good enough, you know, God's displeased with you, you buy into that, and it even bleeds into worship. I mean, you listen to even some of the stuff we used to do at Church in the Now. I mean, I didn't want to, whoever worked for me, whether it was Jimmy or anybody, John or Corey, I always wanted to give them creative freedom, so I let them choose whatever songs they wanted to choose. But there are certain lyrics that even then I was like, I can't. Like, we'd start with, this is the air I breathe. And I'm like, I'm with you. This is the air. Like, oh, this is good. This is good. And then we get to, I'm desperate for you. I'm like, oh, you just lost me. Because I don't feel desperate for God. I'm in God. God's connected with me. God's in me. There's no struggle in me to please him or whatever. Like, that's just not even in my mind. And I appreciate the faith movement helped me get to that point. Because, you know, when I sat under teachings like Fred Price and Kenneth Copeland and what, oh, yeah, that's, yeah, you can hardly see, but that's, I think he weighed like 2 pounds, and that's Robert's hand. But anyway, thanks, Michelle. But I'm glad that they taught me righteousness consciousness, because it was a great segue to where I am now. But see, in the Pentecostal church, we were so afraid we were going to teach what we thought the Baptist taught was eternal security. We taught no security at all. Like, we used to go every Sunday night to the altar and get saved over and over and over and over again. And, you know, I remember even as a child, I fully thought this, that, you know, when you got saved, your name got written in a book, and then if you thought something bad or said a four-letter word, he erased your name out, and then when you got it right, he wrote it back in, and you just hope that on the day you die, you know, it's one of those days you're in the entry. And it's such an absurd thought, but that was never said to me, but that was the dots I connected when I heard, and especially when you know something about yourself, when you think, oh, what I'm supposed to be feeling about little girls, I feel about little boys, and like, oh my God, that's going to send me to hell. That'll keep you, woo, that'll keep you up at night with every normal thought that, you know, think about how much boys think about growing up. Well, you think about that whether you're gay or straight. Whoo, it'll wear you out with, he's cute. Oh, I rebuke this in Jesus' name. I take authority over it. I'll never think. It's just, it's exhausting. And then when you finally get to the place, you realize, oh, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, and God didn't make any mistakes, and I am who I am, or whatever. It's a complete paradigm shift. So, back to what Fred said. To me, really the most important thing Jesus did is when he just shifted everybody's paradigm and said, you have heard it said, comma, but I say. That's huge. Because the people then and the people now are addicted to what they heard said. That was, to me, that was the most important thing Jesus did. When he said, I know this has been said. But in all due respect to Moses and everybody who said it, this is what I say. And see, even now, people, you know, you got all these Bible huggers that they're not interested in what God is saying now. They just have chapter and verse for everything. Well, this is what was said. This is what was said. This is what was said. I don't even engage in it anymore. I see other people that are kind of in the same flow with me that get into the fray with people on social media and argue about it. I'm like, I'm not even, look, if you think you're under condemnation, go with it. There's plenty of churches that will take your money and, you know, and that will prey on your fears and your feelings of unworthiness. I'm telling you, even something like, you know, we don't have a huge budget here, but we've been here for 5 years and I take a salary. I compensate the tech team. We pay rent here. We pay insurance here. We pay the singers. You know, we there's a good bit of outgo. It's not, you know, it's a budget that would, you know, be a pretty healthy small church. And the fact that we've been here for 5 years, every Thursday, I would, you know, Avery gives me the thing, oh, we got money, yeah, we got money, okay. That's kind of amazing because I've never one time told you a tree's going to fall on your house if you don't tithe. I've just said, you know, if you believe in what we're doing and you want to invest in it, buy into it. But that's a huge paradigm shift. I can't tell you, I'm spending more time on this than I meant to, but I can't tell you even back in the day, some of mega church pastors who would tell me off the record, I believe everything that you say, but it'll cost me too much financially. I actually had a guy, I won't say his name because you would, every one of you would know him, but he said, you can't make any money without the devil. He actually said that to me. He said, if you don't scare people with the devil, they're not going to tithe. And I said, I'm going to need to not believe you just said that, because that's the scariest thing I've ever heard said. I'm not scared of demons. I'm scared of what you just said. It's like I said, I'm going to have to leave this table because I'm wanting to grab a microphone and go to your people and say, you guys need to run for your life. There's a con man that's calling himself a pastor. He didn't even believe what he's preaching to you. But it's many of them. And it's a paradigm shift to say, you're not under, not only are you not under condemnation, I'm not even going to be mad at you if you don't give. I'm just saying, you have heard it said, I'm under a curse if I don't tithe. But I say, welcome to the party. Buy into it. You know, it's good. I'm planning on talking about finances. It'd be a good time to take an offering. Every head bowed, every eye closed. What I'm saying is, it takes a strong statement like that, because if you ask Fred, do you really think we don't need Jesus? Of course, off the record, he's going to say, well, yeah, we love Jesus. Nobody's mad at Jesus. But his word needed to cut through like that. It needed to be said exactly like it was said. And again, kudos to you for getting it. Because I didn't get, there was a time if somebody had stood up and said, we don't need Jesus, my email inbox would have been filled with, you know, not at all. Now, like, y'all are like, amen. We don't need him. I'm like, well, y'all might need him a little bit. Come on now. But exactly what he said. I mean, it's this. Let me tell you what's exciting to me. Would I love there to be 2,000, 3,000 people here? I can't honestly say that I would. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I would. Maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. You know what really makes me happy is that I can come in here. Was it a month before last, when I taught probably the strongest message I've ever taught about personal responsibility. I mean, I took God and the devil out of the equation. I said, it's all you. You created your life. And I'm saying it to people who I know are dealing with serious stuff in their life. You know, it's not like everybody's like, la, 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 you know, we have perfect lives. No, I know the stuff that you deal with. And every one of you was like, whew, thank you, sir, may I have another? And I'm like, wow. That was, I don't think you realize, I got chills just thinking about it. That month before last month was great. We needed the meditation, and we're going to do some meditation this month. But that teaching, and not just the teaching, the reception of that teaching was a, a shift. I mean, it really was what they call a sea change. And it still doesn't mean everything's perfect in your life. It means, all right, I'm creating it all then. I mean, do you realize how early on we started Betrod? Leah, I've said this before, but I love this. Leona said, where else could we go? She said, we can't go to some church where they're teaching kindergarten. She said, we're grown folk. And you know, once you've heard grown-up stuff, you can't go, you know, it's cute. Like you go by we were walking through the mall last night and they had a little playground in the mall. And I said, well, man, that's such a great idea for it. Cause it was like, it was fenced in and like people that are tired of shopping and just sit down and let their kids run, you know, get the energy out. For someone who had small kids in malls, I said, man, where was that when my kids? Well, that's a great idea. But I don't want to, there wasn't anything in me that said, can we go in there and play right now? Like, no. And that's the way I feel about religion. I'm like, oh, I get it. That's adorable. That is so cute. But I'm past that now. But I don't want to live life without God or without Spirit. God and Spirit is more important to me now than ever. And can you say the name of Jesus? Yes. I noticed Wellington sent me is that a weekly message you send out? Whatever you sent me in Messenger. And it was very powerful what he said. But I noticed he said, I greet you in the name of the I Am. And I thought, fair enough. I get that. That works for me. But don't think you can't say J-E-S-U-S, even though that's really not his name now. I mean, we're in the now. John says, I saw someone, but he had a name that nobody knew but he himself. So, I know. I tell you what's going to... Can I hit you again? What if you get and you meet him and he says, my name's Karen? I mean, what if that's what he meant when he said, I was in prison and you visited me? And furthermore, and then I'll get to my message. When Doc Sheila and I were discussing Fred's word last week, I said, well, think about it. Jesus is the one who said, it's necessary that I go away. Yeah. So a whole bunch of Christianity basically is Mary Magdalene in the garden holding on to him saying, we want you to be who you were. And they need the image of a long-haired man with a robe and sandals because that's as far as they've gone. And now you're in a place where God's everywhere. You know, God's just everywhere. And not only doesn't disrespect Jesus, it's exactly what he was saying. Like, this is why it's necessary that I go away so that you won't just limit your idea of God to this 33-year-old Israeli man. Thank you for coming. God bless you. Drive safe. Did I say it right, Fred? And he didn't. Please don't get me wrong. I wasn't defending Fred. Fred, you know what I'm saying? It's my duty to, you know, to really judge a prophetic word. Like, all right, I judge it as prophetic. Let me give you an interpretation. Whew, we got the gifts of the Spirit going on up in here. Jesus, you can call his name. Well, I'm telling you, we call his name with every good thing. Where did we pull in yesterday? And there was parking spaces everywhere. I said, just look at him. Just look at Jesus all over this parking lot. All right, now, and I'm sure podcast people are like, can we get to the subject now? No, it was good, podcast people. You needed it. All right, we're staying in the flow of meditation this month, but I want to do a little more teaching. The title this month is The Secret Place of the Most High, The Manifested Miracles of the Meditative Life. Of course, I'm going to use the 91st Psalm. David wrote most of the Psalms. Moses wrote this one. First verse, this is the New King James Version, and it's beautiful poetry. I would rank it up there. You know, most people would say their favorite passage, if you ask the general public of people with some Bible knowledge, they're going to say 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I would rank this up with it. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide in the shadow of the Almighty. It's just a beautiful imagery. Remember when I taught about Sophia wisdom and the female side of God? This is actually when you read all of the chapter, it's really God in the feminine, because it talks about God being like a mother. It says under his wing shall you trust. But if you've ever seen, like I remember years ago when I was in school in Lakeland, I was out praying early one morning. There were ducks everywhere. And there was one by the side, and she looked all swollen, and she was kind of trembling. And I thought, oh, man, something's wrong with this bird. And I was trying to help her. And she lifted up her wing, and all like 15 little ducklings swam out. I'd never seen that in person before, but all of this imagery, this isn't an exegesis of the 91st Psalm, but all of it is about God being a mother. It says under his wings, it should say under her wings shall you trust, because it's the maternal side of God. God really is genderless. God is as male as he, she, it is female. And see, that's another thing. You say that in some places, they just, you know, they need to think God has a penis. And, you know, the idea that God is gender neutral is, it's, you know, it's very next level for people. Well, you know, I'm just, Freddie opened up prophetic words. Now y'all got me talking nasty. Well, Bishop, you're so nasty. But I had to say it that way, or otherwise it wouldn't have the impact. Freddie started it. Well, okay. But it says, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Let me show it to you in the New Living Version. It says, he who lives in the safe place of the Most High will be in the shadow of the All-Powerful. What I love about is this idea of God having a place of secrecy, of intimacy, of something that you have with God that you can't even explain to anybody else. It's like he's everybody's God, it's everybody's God, but there's something you have with, and I'm just going to say him because that's what we're used to saying. There's something you have with him that really is unique to you. And I'll tell you this, until you know the secret place of the Most High, you've really never known God. If you're hitchhiking on somebody else's spirituality, you know their idea of God. And then there's another psalm. This is Psalm 25, verse 14. In the King James Version, it says, the secret of the Lord is with them that fear him. In the Passion Translation, it says, there's a private place reserved for the lovers of God where they sit near him and receive the revelation secrets of his promises. Isn't that beautiful? There's something that you have, you know, this is how you know when you've got a relationship with somebody. It's something that you have with them that you don't have with anybody else. The idea of marriage, the idea of fidelity in marriage is, you know, maybe I'll look at other people, maybe you see other people, maybe you flirt with other people, but there's something we have that's just us. There's just intimacy with us. Or maybe it's somebody that's a friend of yours that you have private jokes. Like, Ken's such a good sport, because when we were up at Howie's last week, after we left Cherokee, we went up to see with him. And, you know, we're driving around for hours in the mountains, and I've known Howie since I was 17, he was 17, I was 18. So we have a lot of history and can just finish each other's sentences or say some little phrase of some stupid thing that if I explained to you why that was funny, you would not think it was funny, but it's still funny to my inner 18-year-old. And sometimes I feel like I feel like this is really excluding you because we're, and he actually said, and I've lived with Ken long enough to know he's truthful. So when he says something, he really means it. He says, no, I just love driving around and listening to y'all talk about the old times. I said, really, do you? Because I would if it was two other people, I would be like, can we talk about something that includes me in the conversation? He said, no, I actually like hearing, you know. And I said, all right, I'm just going to believe that you're, all right, fine. Because Howie adores him. Howie's always said, if you ever break up with him, we're all keeping kin, you know. So I'm like, I get it. You're not the first person that's told me that. But there's certain, you know, there's certain things, you know, sometimes Hallie and I'll go for weeks and not talk to each other, and I'll think of something that was funny, and I'll just text him a line and we'll be like doubled over laughing because we, but there'd be no, if I took the time to explain it to you, you'd be like, really? That was funny? Like, well, you had to have been there at that time then, and you know, and, but that's how you have something with somebody that's just, that's the little circle that's around the two of you. This is why, let me just say this, to anybody that deals with insecurity or anything like this, look, there's enough love to go around. Just because somebody has something with somebody else doesn't mean they don't have affection for you. Even, this seems like a small thing, and I wouldn't even post anything about it, but like, when we go somewhere and we're posting pictures, inevitably, and there was two or three of them yesterday, somebody will say, I'm so jealous that y'all are there. And I think, I know you're just saying that, but why wouldn't you look at somebody having a good time and your first impulse be, oh my God, that's such a great picture. It looks like you're having such a good time. We love that place. Because that's what I think. When I see somebody in a place that I've either been or want to go, it never occurs to me to say, I'm so jealous. I just think, oh wow, that's awesome. I'm glad I can see the pictures and I don't have to get on a plane and fly over. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, whew. You did the heavy lifting on this. I'm just enjoying it vicariously through you. And if anybody's watching this, I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just saying, examine why you say things like that. Why wouldn't you celebrate when something good happens for somebody? It's just such a waste of time to feel inferior to somebody else. Understand that you have to understand this person has something with that person that has nothing to do with me, and if I love this person, I have to build my own, I have to find something with them instead of, you know, feeling like I'm not getting enough attention. Because I'm telling you, let me tell you how relationships work, and I don't know why somebody's pulling this out of me. The more you need that, you try to, I need that secret place with you, it actually repels the person. Ladies, can I say something about the way, at least for straight men, how their brain works. Nothing makes a man want to spend time with you less than saying, you never want to spend any time with me. That so does not work in the male brain. Can I, straight men, don't listen to this. I'm talking. All the single ladies, let me just say it. Now listen, shh. Men, don't listen. Watch the ball game. Listen. But if you want the man to want to be with you, go make some plans and get all fixed up. Be putting on your makeup. And he goes, where are you going? I'm just going out for a little bit. Even if it's just going out with the girls or going, why are you putting lipstick on? I don't know. I just felt, where you going, baby? Come on. You ain't got to go. I'm telling you, men are. It's not rocket science. But when you go, I just wish he would spend more time with me. I'm telling you, even if he's holding you in his head, he's thinking, dear God, I've got to get away. That's not the way it works. And all right, settle down, people. But the thing is about having something with somebody that's unique to them, that's organic. You can't make it happen. And if that chemistry isn't there to create that thing with somebody, you can't make it happen. That's why... And unfortunately, in the past, this has been misinterpreted as me being aloof, and I'm not. I really deeply care about people, but I also believe if you don't get it, I can't make you get it. Do you know what I mean? That's why, like, there's people that come here for a while and then leave. I don't chase after them, and it's not that I know Jesus in the 90 and 9. I understand that whole piece, And if I think somebody's really in trouble, of course I will. But I'm so focused on, you have to get it. You can't be here because I shamed you into it or made you feel obligated or whatever. I have to keep, you know, in all these years that y'all been driving here, I know this, most of you, this isn't your neighborhood. I'm telling you, there hasn't been one time that I've walked into this theater and thought, this is just amazing that these people do this every week. I never take it for granted. I've never thought, y'all better recognize. I don't even think that way. I think it's worth it. I feel like I'm going to give you something that was worth you driving here for, but I never take it for granted. And that just kind of bleeds through in every part of my life, you know? I remember, I've shared this with you before, but speaking of prophetic words, back in the day, a lot of y'all wouldn't even remember who Andre Crouch was, but Andre Crouch was a big deal back in the day. And I remember he wrote a song called If Heaven Was Never Promised to Me, It Would Be Worth Serving the Lord. And that just messed with my head, because I thought, what the what? Because I was raised thinking this whole thing's about trying not to go to hell. I mean, that was my whole modus operandi. It's like, just don't burn me. I never, you know, these kids that corporal punishment doesn't work on, you know, like I've people say, I tried to spank my kid and just made him more aggressive. I'm like, I've never understood that. Like with my kid, my parents, they were, you know, they were old school. And I was like, if it's tears you want, it's tears you got. I don't need to prove some point. You're like, you know, I can turn, oh, I promise I'll never do it again. If that's what you, if that will keep that belt in your belt loops and not on my butt, what you want. But I've heard people say, you know, well, Christina was kind of that way. I mean, the last time I ever spanked, I never took a belt to them, but I popped her a couple times. I couldn't get her to settle down. And I realized with her temperament, she just took it as a challenge. She just got aggressive. Like, she popped me back. And I was like, I can't, you know, she's like this little tiny girl. I can't get into some physical thing with her. I thought, this isn't going to work. With the boys, I could threaten them, and they would settle right down. Not with her. She was like, bring it on, Daddy. You know, and I was like, this, I've got to find another way, because spanking's not going to work for this one. It's just not. And I remember it was a turning point. I never did it again. And I was like, this is ineffective with her. Because, I mean, I'm sure I could, I'm big enough I could win, but that's, you know, I don't want defects calling me saying, you know, the neighbors are concerned, you know. So anyway, I love several translations, but I like this imagery of God having, you know, a place of intimacy that's just yours. Going back to some of the really awesome things that Jesus said prophetically, one of which was, even the hairs of your head are numbered, meaning God has such intimate knowledge of you. David would say things like, you know my down sitting and my uprising. There's not a word in my tongue that you don't know altogether. If I were to number the sands of the sea, they are more. Your thoughts are more than that. And that's why the scripture calls David a man after God's own heart. Why? Because God picked him out? No, because David thought he was a man after God's own heart. David really thought he was special. And guess what? He got treated special. Now, some stuff happened to him that he brought on himself. But you, listen, whoever and whatever God is, you're determining what that deity is going to do for you. It's not, God's not just arbitrarily picking out people, you know, to bless. I'm going to bless this one, not bless. That's kind of my issue with, I love praise reports, but when somebody gets a praise report and says, with Gary and Christine, like several, their neighbors' houses were just like wiped out. Theirs wasn't. It wasn't in their mind to say, "Oh, God blessed us so much." If their neighbors read that, that's like, well, "What's wrong with us? Why, you know, why's God like it?" So it's okay to say, "I'm so happy my house was preserved," or whatever. But don't just make it about like God arbitrarily hit you with the magic wand, because there's other people that say, "Well, why didn't it happen for me?" There is. So I believe in talking up the good stuff, but think about how you say it. Now, if personally you feel like, I can't say this out loud, but I really think I'm God's favorite, then fine, think that. Just don't tell other people that. Because if you really think that, the word favor and favorite, they're the same word. So if you talk about I'm walking in favor, you're saying is, I'm God's favorite. And the good news is we can all be God's favorite. It's not an either or. But you have to be aware of how you sound to other people. You know, it takes some maturity and some distance between things that you've said. You can look back and go, oh, you know what? I needed some instruction in that. And it's very liberating to realize, oh, I'm still growing. I went through a thing, what has it been, 3 years ago now with TFAM, when I was out there, that I said some things that in a bishop's meeting that I felt like I got wrongly judged for, and it really affected my relationship. But honestly, now I'm enough down the road that I think, you know what, without some of the, not Bishop Flunder because she knew me, but without some of those people knowing me, I understand why they heard what I said. And it was a teachable moment for me. And it took me a while to get past the wounding of it. And let me explain, maybe I need to say this. When you know what your history is, you assume everybody else knows that. I've actually had to have this talk with Judah a couple times, because Judah grew up in a diverse world, where he grew up with African-American friends. And sometimes when he's out, when he was younger, he would say things, never racial things, but like trying to feel more endeared to young black men who don't know who he is. And I would say, Judah, I know you're taken for granted that you can get by with saying things like that, but these guys didn't grow up with you. They just see you as a smart-ass white boy. And you're trying to say, no, I'm not like these other white guys. I said, you're wasting your time, because there's no way they're going to know that. I've dealt with that with sometimes with men on the street, that I will say, no, I don't have any change today or whatever, and they've gone off and said, oh, white people are sorry or whatever. And I think I could stand here and explain to you, I've probably helped more African Americans financially in my life than you ever will. But there's no way I can make you understand that, because just standing here out on the street, you just seem, I'm the face of white privilege, and I'm just the indifferent white guy that doesn't care about your plight. And I can't make you, there's no way I can make you see otherwise than that. So I'm just going to either have to give you the money or just keep going. And I don't know why I'm saying that. Why was I saying that? There was some segue to that. Oh, about learning how you say, yeah, learning how you give your praise reports. Because that was real. Even, honestly, I'm to a place now, and I'm not going to remove the YouTube videos or anything, but I don't know that I would even do my riff on The Color Purple now like I used to do it, because times are different now. You know what I mean? It's like everything's very ratcheted up right now, and you know, I'm like, I don't know that I could get by with that. Like, I'm in a safe place with people who know me, can obviously see my affection for the movie, because I can quote it from, you know, I've clearly seen it a bazillion times. And a lot of, back in the day when I would go to all black churches, it was a real icebreaker for me, because I would go in and they, you know, I could tell them clearly the first white man that's ever preached here. And I do, you know, you told Hoppo to beat me, and immediately the whole people, everybody's laughing. But, you know, things have changed in the last couple of years, and you have to discern the times and not be insensitive, because there's some things you could say, you know, like I was watching Blazing Saddles the other day, and you know, Richard Pryor wrote half that movie. Richard Pryor was one of the main, but you couldn't make that movie now. That, you know, there's no way you could make that movie now, and people joking about saying the N-word or something, like, no, that was a different, in a galaxy far, far away. So you have to discern your times, but also you have to discern how you're wearing your Christianity, because you can really make people feel horrible about themselves if it's all about, let me say it this way, I believe in letting your light shine, but not in a way that blinds other people. Do you understand? I can light a candle, or I could stick a flashlight in your face. That's not, those are two different concepts. Lighting a candle says, follow me, let me show you, let me live my life and show you by example how you can create your own reality and all this kind of stuff. But I don't want to rub my blessings in your face either. All right. I think I made that point. Now, let's get to the meditation part. Let me tell you, even what little bit of meditation that we've done or that you've done on your own or whatever, it's helped you more than you even know. I'm telling you. I mean, meditation changes brain chemistry. I can't explain to you how it does. It does in ways that prayer doesn't. I'm not anti-prayer, but prayer has a specific focus on it. I need this to happen. And I'm not mad at prayer. I mean, this week when Hannah went in the hospital, Dana texted me and he said, please pray. He used the word P-R-A-Y. And I said, prayer's going up right now, because I understood what he was saying. This isn't the time to split hairs and be semantics about sending good vibes, whatever. Like, this is a desperate situation. The word prayer has a gravitas to it that I need you to grasp right now. Got it. However, prayer is you trying to say what you want to happen, which isn't altogether wrong. But you can, I mean, Paul talked about praying amiss quite a bit. Somebody yesterday, maybe somebody in the, I can't remember who it was, might be somebody in the cyber audience, texted me and said, I was kind of praying and meditating yesterday, and then I started just groaning. I couldn't even say anything, and this sort of sound came out of me I've never heard before. So I just texted back, Romans 8:26, groanings that cannot be uttered. Paul talked about, we don't know what to pray for as we ought. Haven't you ever had somebody pray something for you that you're like, this isn't what I want. Why are you praying that for me? I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, some man's beating a woman in the prayer chains, but we're going to pray to save their marriage. She's like, don't pray to save my marriage. Pray that he doesn't kill me. You know what I mean? I mean, that's like y'all are trying to impose your views on me, and you don't understand the situation I'm in right now. So I don't think meditation should replace prayer, but I do think it changes you in ways that prayer doesn't. I think meditation gets you to a place where you understand your creative powers, but you also accept a lot more. And acceptance doesn't necessarily mean passivity. It just means there are some things in life, this is just the way they are. And if I'm going to bring change, I'm going to have to sort of bring change within the system. That's why even with these meditations that I write on Facebook every day, I still will refer to the scriptures fairly regularly, because I understand that that's ground zero for most people. And if I don't at least refer to it or whatever, I'm going to lose a lot of an audience that really needs to hear what I have to say. Because you never have to throw your Bibles away. Understand? Jesus is always welcome here. You understand? But we're also going to the next level as well. And I'm so happy we've taken this journey together. I want to go in. I'm so glad we've had this time together. But I am. I wouldn't want to have this revelation by myself. You know what I mean? I want to reflect it off somebody and see it working in them. So, speaking of that, let me show you. This is what Chopra says. This is Psalm 25:14 in the Voice. It says, only those who stand in awe of the eternal will have intimacy with him, and he will reveal his covenant to them. Which is, King James is, the secret of the Lord is with them that fear him. It's talking about God in intimacy. Now, what Deepak Chopra says is this. To make the right choices in life, you have to get in touch with your soul. To do this, you need to experience solitude, which most people are afraid of, because in the silence, you hear the truth and know the solutions. That's why I tell people, even when I lead you in meditation, there's really no wrong way to meditate. Even if you just said, I don't really get it, but I'm just going to shut up and be quiet while everybody else says it, even that has value to it. No doubt about it. That's why I'm really so happy with the synchronicity of this last trip, because I love that we did a sitting meditation and a walking meditation, because I think they're really kind of two different dimensions. And even when we were in St. Simon's, we were on the beach, and then when the tide went out and you could walk way, way, way out on that sandbar, I said, let's walk out there, but it's going to be a silent walk. And there was something really just holy about all those people as the sun was coming up just walking in silence. I don't know how to explain it to you. And, you know, some people would look at it and go, well, you weren't doing anything. Nobody was singing and praising or whatever. It's like, yeah, I don't know how to explain this to you. It's a holy moment. It's the secret place of the Most High. Furthermore, if I can use the relationship analogy one more time, do you know what really, ultimately, the clearest sign of a healthy relationship is? Is when you can be quiet with somebody. Now, you don't want to be quiet all the time. You want to be able to talk when you need to talk. But there's something about, you know, those of you that have been married for a long time, there's something about just sitting quietly with somebody. Just, you don't have to keep the conversation going. It's just like, I am aware of you in my space, and I want you here. I desire your energy, but we don't have to talk all the time. And that's really these scriptures. Yes, there is a peace. And that's what these scriptures about the secret place of the Most High, that's what that is. As I've told you before, when Jesus would go off to the mountain for the night, I don't think he was, you know, I don't think he took a prayer list with him, was speaking in tongues. I think he was just communing. He was like walking the mountains and just, you know, that there's something very holy about that. The first time I invited Stephen to go with me on the participate in the meditation weekend, because the ministry pay his way. That's something I want to do. The ministry doesn't do that. And the reason I did it, it wasn't about the training. It was, he had posted a picture, I don't know who took it, but it's him at Lake Claremere just looking at the lake, and he says, stop and take in a moment. And it made me think, oh, well, you might get what I'm doing, and you can add an aspect to it. And this last one we did, we actually worked out, you know, with a bunch of y'all came. So, but it I would have never asked him, if he hadn't put that picture on, it would have never occurred to me. Because I wasn't thinking, I'm going to take everybody to, you know, boot camp training. That wasn't even in my mind. It was that, what? But that's not what I was thinking. What caught my attention, I thought, oh, he's looking at a lake, and he made a point about taking in a moment. Okay, that is something that I relate to more than just working out with. It's about, you have to understand, you know, there's a vibe that goes with everything. You know, if you go hear somebody preach and you never come down off the high, it has a certain appeal to it, but to me, after a while, it just wears out my spirit. It's just like, whew, I get it. I mean, believe me, I grew up in tent revivals and sawdust, and there's nothing anybody's ever done in a Pentecostal church that I haven't seen. There's very few things I haven't done. I mean, you know, I have some history. I remember R.W. Shambach, he pitched a tent back in the 80s out by Six Flags, and Robert, that's back when John Alexander was still in my life, and the three of us went to hear Shambach, and we're sitting there on the front row. We were like digging it, because he was just so radical, and just, I mean, he was the epitome of an old school tent revival preacher. And so he was feeding off a lot of our energy, because some of the stuff he was doing, we were high-fiving each other, because he was crazy. He'd raised people from the dead and all kinds of stuff. We were like, this is great. This is just what we wanted. And then he says, these three young men up here, we're going to do a victory march. We're going to run around this tent. I want you three men to lead it. And we were like, yeah. We were like so into it. You know, now I'd be like, I'm going to have to opt out of that. But at the time, we're like, hell yeah, let's go. Like, we're running around the tent. We're like laughing. We weren't making fun of it. We were just like, this is a hoot. This is exactly what we wanted, you know. And guess we you know, it went in Rome, you know, went in the tent. But I also know there's a place you get where you just want to go, would everybody just settle down and shut up? And can we be quiet for a minute? And does everything have to be pumping all the time? And I don't think this is just my age. I think it's just, no, there's really something in the quietness that I crave. What, Jack, if you didn't hear what Jack just, Jack just said, when we were quiet in St. Simon, yes. He said, when we were quiet in St. Simon's, it gave a chance for the water and the waves to speak to us. Exactly. Because if you're there and just cranking the music, talking, you're not going to hear. Well, even in Cherokee the other day, I said, let's turn off the music and listen to this river. Because the river has a voice. And you start, some people, you got to be careful who you say this to, because people think you're losing your mind. But you start wow, this tree's really, on the way over here today, I'm telling you, every one of these trees, these beautiful trees, they were good for my soul. There's something about seeing that color and it represents so much. It's like, it's not even, some people say, well, it's sad because the leaves are about to die. I'm like, no, they're not. They're going to be back. It's a cycle that happens it's not the end of it. Have you not seen, there's always a spring. That's what makes this so cool. Is that these leaves are, and they're going to start the whole cycle over in a few months. It's a resurrection. It's not, why would you interpret that as, oh, it's sad, the leaves are dying? I'm like, wow, you really need to extend that a little bit more. There's four seasons. How are people so negative? It's unbelievable. Anyway, but I felt like every one of them was speaking to me, and I want to look at every one of them. I love that I could say to you all the other day, go put your hand on a tree and be quiet, and not one person rolled their eyes or anything. You're just like, okay. And you might not have heard an actual voice speak to you, but something happened when you connected with that. And I'll tell you, as I've said before, I am and always will be a city boy. I love the city. However, you cannot live on concrete all the time. You have to get out. Your bare feet have to touch some sand or some grass. You have to, even yesterday, just being up on Lookout Mountain, I said, just breathe that air. It's like there's nothing like it up here above in this fall mountain air. It's just, it's perfection. But you have to, I'm not telling you to stop taking your medicine or stop going to the doctor, but do the other stuff more. Do you know what I mean? Do what you got to do with your doctor, but go sit on a beach somewhere and look at the, I'm telling you, it's therapeutic, it's healing. When people say, you're going to the beach again, like, mind your own business. It's like, I may need it more than you need it. And if I'm not asking you to pay for it, why do you even care if I went every weekend? All I need from you is like, well, it's a weekend, they're back at the beach again. Like, that's all I need from you, if that. Doesn't it just wear you out? Everybody have an opinion about everything that everybody else does. I got one last night. Somebody very close to us who actually sat in our picture. Do y'all ever stay home? I thought, why would you care? Why do you care if we never went home again? Why do you care? I'm not going to write you. Do you ever leave home? If I'm not asking you to drive me there, or pay for the trip, you shouldn't really have an opinion about it. It's just like, well, I love what you said, enjoy life yesterday. We enjoyed it. It was great. They were doing some kind of, is it rowing? What did they do? It was some college thing, and all these kids are in these rowboats. I don't even know what they were doing. I was taking pictures of that video, and it was exciting. Like, all these kids were, I was like caught up. I think I'm a rowing fan.
like a rowing team.
Everybody else.
Everybody
did.
Coming at
us. White eight in all black. We can take it in the short socks. Lands on.
They were everywhere.
White eight, all black, short socks.
Yeah, we were there one last year when they did it, and it was really cool. We were just. It was guys and girls, and I guess it's collegiate, but it was very cool. It was just cool to see how they did it. Like, I've never really watched how they do it, and it was just a lot about teamwork and the whole rhythm of it. And I was trying to figure out, well, how are they even compete? I can't see where they're, because they go out in the river. Like, how do they know when they won or whatever? It was just, I didn't even fully understand it, but I was fascinated by it. Because it was young people, and it was athletic, and it was alive, and it was just, I love being in that moment. Some people would say, wasn't it real crowded up there? Like, yeah. We hear it every year. Isn't it real crowded in New York at Christmas? Yeah, it's insane. Y'all ever going back? Yeah, it's the week before Christmas. You couldn't pay me. Well, nobody's writing you a check. Nobody even asked you to drive me to the airport. So you don't have to have an opinion about it whatsoever. I may go this afternoon. You've been so many times. And again, your point would be what? Dr. Dyer says this. Make peace with silence and remind yourself that it is in this space that you'll come to remember your spirit. When you're able to transcend an aversion to silence, you'll also transcend many other miseries. And it is in this silence that the remembrance of God will be activated. What did John say in his epistle? Let that abide in you, which you heard from the beginning. Some people can't hear it because they won't shut up long enough to hear. I mean, you've already got an inner GPS system. You've already got... You already have an inner light. If you'll be quiet, you'll start knowing the right thing. Those words like intuition and stuff, those aren't just psychobabble. Those are real things that you can't know if you don't learn how to be quiet. And just in the way you do everything. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a coffee drinker, then make your coffee in the morning and make it a moment of solitude before you just turn on the news or whatever. Stand at your window and look out at the beauty and drink your coffee and sort of get your... You can make that into a meditation. Meditation is a lifestyle. To say, like, this is a moment I have. And you know, you got to figure out what works for you. That may not be, you know, some people say, well, I just get right out and I want to go for a run. Well, then fine. Then go for a run and make that your meditation. But be silent while you're doing it. There's a time, you know, Ecclesiastes, there's a time to speak, there's a time to be silent. And then finally, Osho, the poet, says, your enlightenment is perfect only when silence has come to be a celebration. Hence my insistence that after you meditate, you must celebrate. After you have been silent, you must enjoy it. You must have a thanksgiving. A deep gratitude must be shown towards the whole just for the opportunity that you are, that you can meditate, that you can be silent, that you can laugh. That's why I've loved, even a couple times we've done the beach meditations, once it's over with, then I start playing some music and everybody starts dancing. It's like there's a moment of celebration that after the silence has fully permeated us, now it's time, now let's laugh and talk and, you know, and be crazy and whatever. Because that's important too. I don't want to be with a bunch of people that never speak. That would be, can you imagine if you taught meditation so much, people would be like, well, you could say something. We're going to do... Let's bring the lights down. Those of you that are visitors of ours, I think you'll get it. You'll understand it. You don't have to participate, but I welcome you to. We'll just do a... Charles, just find me like around a 7-minute one. We'll try to stay on with the time, but I do want to continue the meditation, so please sit up straight, put both feet on the floor, empty your lap. Your posture is important. Get into a posture if it's a mudra, if you want to open your hands or whatever works for you. We're going to breathe in through our nose and hold it. Exhale through the mouth. Inhale. Exhale through the mouth. You're going to become consistent in your breathing. When you breathe in through your nose, exhale through your mouth, you get nitrous oxide into your muscles. Oxygenate your brain. A lot of depression comes from people just not having enough oxygen in their brain. When you align your spinal column and make it as upright as you can, you set yourself in a place of receptivity. We're breathing. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. That happened really quick. A lot of you got there immediately, so I'm not going to have to talk a lot. Just stay in a place of serenity. Whatever stress you took on from the week, now's your time to let it go. Clear the slate for what's coming up this week. Keep breathing until the music stops, and then can open your eyes. Flowing out of it. Peace to your mind. Peace to your heart. Peace to your body. Beautiful. You can open your eyes, start coming out of it. She did good. You know, it's interesting. One of those quotes, I think the Osho quote was, stop feeling uncomfortable with silence. And I remember in the charismatic days, anytime it got quiet, we felt like something needs to happen. There needs to be a message in tongues. You know, it's like the silence always meant somebody's about to say something, which was fine. But the scripture says tongues shall cease, prophecies they shall vanish away. And there comes a point where you go, wow, the silence was enough. The silence is God speaking to me. It wasn't a very long meditation, but it's enough for you to just set the tone for the rest of your day. Man, it's such a beautiful day. Please, just promise me you're going to at least walk outside for 5 minutes. Please, go look at one of those trees, breathe in that air, look at that perfect blue sky. Please don't just run indoors. Just do something. Sit in, if it's chilly outside, put on a coat or something. But you can't, I don't know. I'm just so aware of the days passing. When we were down in Chattanooga yesterday, he said, are we going to ride to the top of the mountain? And it never occurred to me to say, again, as many times, I was like, no, I don't want it. This is a beautiful day. I mean, not only did we ride up, we put the top back. And I said, I want to, you know, these days are precious. And you're going to go like that, and it's going to be winter. And then, you know, it's another fall that's come and gone. So just savor it, enjoy it. Enjoy every bit of it. You get anything out of this today? But of course you did. Let's all stand. We'll play this for the YouTube people. Danny's not here today, so who do they give checks to? Somebody. Somebody take somebody's checks. Somebody take them.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give any time by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then my online donation.
If you make a check, make it to JESN.
When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month.
If you have cash, pay it forward.
Thank you for your investment in Metron.
I speak peace over you, and that you find your secret place of the Most High that will be unique to you. It won't be mine. It won't be the person next to you. It's your place with God. If that's in a prayer closet, if that's out in the woods, if that's on the water, if that's in a garden, if that wherever that is, the secret place of the Most High, abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I speak protection over your spirit, soul, and body this week. And health. Your health springs forth speedily. I love you so much. Go in peace.